You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon. Thanks for being with me in this next hour. We've got one more 60-minute period to talk about the things that matter most. Joining me in this segment is Dave Armstrong. David was raised a liberal Methodist, became a pagan for about 10 years with occultic leanings, and then converted to evangelical Protestantism in 1977. He was involved in countercult work in the early 1980s, started writing apologetics at the time, and in the late 80s, he became a campus missionary and pro-life activist. His journey into the Catholic Church is one of many to appear in Surprised by Truth, which is an anthology of testimony stories. Dave's website won Envoy Magazine's prestigious Website of the Year Award for 1998. He's the author of a number of books, including A Biblical Defense of Catholicism and More Biblical Evidence for Catholicism. And he's also authored the inserts, the apologetic inserts that show up in the Catholic Answer Bible published by our Sunday Visitor. Plus, David's a longtime friend and the godfather of my son, James. Dave, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's good to see you again in studio here.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about the Catholic Answer Bible. The translation is the New American Bible.
Yes.
And how did you get involved with the project?
Well, Mike DeBroyle, the acquisitions editor, or whatever they're called at OSV, contacted me and asked if I'd like to do these inserts. It's basically 44 pamphlets of basic apologetics stuck into the Bible every 100 pages or so.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to commentary, it's not commentary, it's really tracts. So I would compare it to like Catholic answer tracts, one-page things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are nicely done. You can say there's 44 of them throughout that are placed within the text.
So two-sided, so it'd be 22 inserts and 44 articles.
Yeah. Let's take a look at some of them and just go over some of the questions. Let's start out with the most basic one. What is apologetics?
Well, it means defense of the faith. It doesn't mean the old thing is you're just apologizing for the faith. No, the traditional meaning of it comes from Plato's Apology, which meant defense. And that's the literal meaning of apologetics. So the Catholic apologist is defending and providing a rational support for the Catholic faith.
Now, some people believe, of course, that the faith needs no defending, that Jesus just preached the gospel, Paul just preached the gospel. How do you respond?
I respond with 1 Peter 3:15. It says, stand ready to make a defense. The same word as apologia in Greek. For your faith and the hope, I think it says, the hope that is in you with gentleness and reverence. That's Armstrong paraphrase. So I've always tried to live by that verse and others. Jude 3, contend earnestly for the faith. And we have the model of Paul. It talks a lot in Acts that Paul goes into the synagogues and the academies and reasoning and disputing, different words are used. And so he's arguing with people. He's not just preaching. He's actually dialoguing with them, and that's a model for me, too, in my ministry.
Mm-hmm. To actually engage people's questions.
Yeah.
The proclamation is fine, but you also have to engage people's questions, and that inevitably means you have to defend the faith because they're going to ask questions, and they'll have misunderstandings and misconceptions, and those have to be cleared up. Let's go to something. For many years, you were an apologist, but operating and working outside the visible boundaries of the Catholic Church. Evangelical Protestant. Let me ask you some very basic apologetic questions, because I think sometimes among Catholics, when they discover, the Church, they fall in love with the Church, and they're enthusiastic about the Church. And it often seems as though Catholic apologists are focused on distinctly Catholic things rather than things that are actually shared by a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters as well. So let me ask, why do Catholics believe that Jesus is God incarnate?
Well, we believe that on the same basis as our Protestant brothers do, because the Bible has abundant testimony saying that Jesus is God. John 1:1, the Word was God. Colossians 2:9, that talks about the bodily incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an example of of a doctrine where we totally agree with them. It's in, you know, the Nicene Creed, so all Christians agree with that. I defend that too on my website. In fact, a few people have commented that they like the fact that I do the broader apologetics too, and not just defending always transubstantiation. So I deal with atheists, I deal with the cults, and people like Jehovah's Witnesses, and I even had a debate with a, he called himself an ethical vegetarian, where it's murder to eat meat because you're killing animals, and so that one of the many different views I come across.
I wonder how the vegetables feel about it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, I made that argument. I said if you find out that vegetables have feelings and pain, then what do? Then you have to starve to death.
One of the questions people often have has to do with the Bible. Where did it come from? How do we know what books belong in it? What are some of the simple ways that people can answer that question?
The canon was another doctrine that is from tradition. A lot of people don't seem to realize that. If in the Protestant environment, it's like this unspoken assumption, unproven. You take it for granted that the Bible is what it is. But if you go back in early church, there is all sorts of disputes about what books were in. There were books that were considered scripture that aren't now, like the Shepherd of Hermas and things like that, First Clement. So people don't realize that there was a great deal of disagreement. So it had to be worked out, actually, literally by the church. The first time that the whole New Testament was listed as today was by Athanasius in, I think it was around 330, somewhere in there. So that's 300 years. They didn't even know what the New Testament was, because the Bible itself doesn't list its own books.
Yeah.
So, and that's an argument against sola scriptura, which is another big question there.
Yeah. Now, what was it that began moving you in the direction of the Catholic Church?
Well, the first issue was contraception, learning that nobody believed you could practice contraception until 1930, no Christian group, till the Anglicans in 1930. So that's what
That was kind
first.
Of a jolt, huh?
Yeah.
It was like, huh, how could that be such unanimity? And then that unanimity is shattered at that Lambeth Conference, 1930.
Yeah, I think it's a striking argument. If you care about church history at all, you can't fail to be astonished that something could be unanimous, and then all of a sudden it's almost unanimous in the other direction in the last 70 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. So I had to deal with that, and that's the first issue. So moral theology, it would be.
So for you, that you thought that at that time that the Catholic Church must have something to its credit for at least standing firm. Is that it? I mean, you hadn't bought the church's teaching on contraception. You were just surprised by the historical fact that people had shifted their opinions.
At first, you wonder, why is it that the Catholic Church, because I was a pro-lifer, and I was all involved in that, and so you start thinking about contraception, because we had Catholics in the movement too, and I was always asking them, well, what's this business about contraception? You know, we're trying to fight abortion, and you guys are in this legal thing of, oh, you can't even contracept.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to work through that, and then I found out the history of it. So you learn that, for instance, Martin Luther thought contraception almost as if it was murder.
Yeah.
So his view actually goes beyond the Catholic view.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, it is surprising to hear him on this issue. All major Protestant leaders, Calvin, Wesley, Luther, Zwingli, Jonathan Edwards, just tremendous unanimity. We'll come back in just a moment, Dave, and continue. My guest, David Armstrong, he is author of A Biblical Defense of Catholicism, and he's also done the apologetic inserts in the Catholic Answer Bible, published by Our Sunday Visitor. I'm Al Cresta. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and with me, David Armstrong. He is author of great clarity and has produced some tremendous material over the years, including the apologetic inserts to the Catholic Answer Bible, published by Our Sunday Visitor. Dave, let's talk, we were talking about the canon of the Bible. The Bible doesn't emerge out of the blue with a table of contents in it.
Yeah.
It requires the recognition of the bishops to that these are inspired texts. How is it that Catholics have an larger canon, a larger list of books than Protestants do? They've got a restricted book of lists.
Well, in this case, we're closer to the early church, which is, I always see irony in that, because the Protestants, the very term Reformation, they try to convince us that they're closer to the early church than we are. Well, in this case, the canon that was decided in 393 and 397, councils at Hippo and Carthage, they decided that there were 46 books altogether rather than 39. The Protestant, I won't name them all, but that'll be homework for the listener. So we're merely accepting that. That has the 27 New Testament books and also has the Old Testament with seven extra books. So we accept what that council decided, where the Protestants actually never separated those books until after the 16th century. So that is a late tradition. It's not what the church thought all those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when the Catholic Answer Bible was published, and Our Sunday Visitor decided to publish this, they must have thought that there'd been insufficient adult formation over the last generation, because some of these questions, you know, you would think most Catholics would be aware of. I mean, they have answers to them already, but they don't. And that's a result, I think, of probably poor instruction or neglectful instruction.
Yeah, it's a terrible scandal of the lack of catechesis in the last 40 years or so. It's just atrocious how ignorant Catholics are. I can say that because I'm one, so it's like you criticize your own group. But I think that's why apologetics is so popular now, because it sort of filled in the void that there's this huge gap of lack of education. Catholics, they tend to not have Bible studies or mm-hmm. prayer groups and things like we did. You and I are both Protestants. We did that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our familiarity with the Bible,
which
I always say is I'm glad I was a Protestant, because today they are much more, they do much better at Bible study and things like that is not un-Catholic in essence, but it's poorly practiced today. So
yeah, certainly it's not as much a part of Catholic culture as it is of Protestant culture.
Yeah.
That's certainly true. Let me go to some distinctly Catholic issues here. Talk about relics with me. I know for a lot of people, this idea of passing bones around is a little disconcerting. What are relics? Why? What's the theological and biblical justification for veneration of relics?
Okay. Well, broadly speaking, Catholics think that the idea of sacramentalism is the notion that matter can convey grace. So, most Protestants accept baptism as a sacrament. So what that is it's water applied to an infant, conveys grace to them, and we think regeneration, which Luther agrees with and various Protestants. So when you get to relics, it's an example of the bones of a saint or something of that sort, that somehow it has grace in it because this person was saintly. In other words, Catholics emphasize the unity of matter and spirit, that God is working through both of them. Mm-hmm. Now, how I find an example of relics in the Bible is Elisha, which is in 2 Kings 13:20-21, talks about Elisha died and was buried, and then someone fell into his grave, came in contact with his bones, and came back to life. So this is an explicit example of relics causing a miracle.
Mm.
It seems to me that you can't get over that example. How do you overcome that?
That's, yeah.
It's an explicit proof of it.
Yeah, what do you make of it? I mean, everybody has to come up, every Christian has to come up with some explanation for that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It isn't as though this is some something that's been invented. No matter what you think of the Catholic theology of relics, everybody has to deal with this data. Here you have somebody's, by contact of the bones of Elisha, somebody comes back to life. So that's
fun. And that's what's fun. In fact, I'll put a little plug. My new book, it's called The Catholic Verses, published by Sophia Institute Press. And I deal with how Protestant commentators try to explain away things like this. It's really interesting to see. They can't believe in relics, but it's right in front of them. So you see them trying to rationalize and special plead. And brilliant, otherwise brilliant men, but they have that bias against the Catholic position. So they have to explain it away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, let me come to something that, again, is considered a Catholic distinctive, and that is the doctrine of purgatory. A lot of people consider that purgatory is a permanent place. If you're not quite good enough for heaven, you're not quite bad enough for hell, so you end up getting stuck in purgatory forever.
No, it's not. It doesn't last forever. By definition, it's temporary, or you might call it a waiting room or a holding tank,
mm-hmm.
to put in crass terms. Purgatory is preparing you to enter into God's presence by cleansing you, which is a very biblical concept. I cite 1 Corinthians 3:11-15. And the argument I always make with Protestants is, I'll say, do you think you have to be literally holy when you come into God's presence? And they'll say, yes, of course. So we agree on that. The only difference is how long of a process that this cleansing or purging, that's where it comes from, purging. We think it's a process. Protestants tend to think that it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
But it's really not that different, because we both agree that there is such a necessity for the cleansing.
Yeah.
And so I try to find common ground whenever I can with those sorts of arguments.
When we're staying, we're in this area of purgatory, let's go to heaven and hell.
Okay.
What is the Catholic teaching on heaven and hell?
We think that they're both eternal. There's eternal hellfire for those who reject God's grace. We don't think, I mentioned in my notes here, I'll quote one sentence, we believe that God sends no one to hell without that person's free consent. And I cite for that 1 Timothy 2:4, 2 Peter 3:9. Calvinist position would say that there's no free will in the sense that the person doesn't decide their destiny. God unconditionally elects them both to salvation and damnation. We reject the reprobate or the damnation part, as opposed to free will, that the person has to choose to reject God and then they're condemned to hell. It's almost like God gives them the freedom, almost as if He's honoring their freedom. I think C.S. Lewis said the doors of hell are locked on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't want to be with God, so God says, okay, you don't want to live with me, then you have your freedom to go there.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to know how horrible it'll be.
I want to go over the way people can get a hold of your books. I know biblicalcatholic.com is really just extraordinary apologetics website. It's easy to get to, biblicalcatholic.com. And then tell me about the blog. You're just off the air talking to me about it. What's going on?
Yeah, blogging is the latest rage on the Internet. It's sort of crossed between a website and a discussion board. You'll post things and then people comment. And mine's called Cor Ad Cor Loquitur, which means heart speaks to heart. And it's Socrates58.blogspot.com. There's a link off my website.
Yeah, give me that one more time.
Socrates58.blogspot.com.
Okay. Now, how can people get a hold of your books?
Just go to my homepage, and I have links. I have the images of the books. You just click on there, and you can go to Amazon or or Sophia or OSV.
Okay. BiblicalCatholic.com, though, would be a way of getting to any of these publishers or to the blog.
Easily navigated, and I have links everywhere and connections.
Dave, thanks. Appreciate it very much. And again, David Armstrong is the author of A Biblical Defense of Catholicism, More Biblical Evidence for Catholicism, Top 10 Questions Catholics Are Asked, and he's the author of the Apologetic Inserts into the Catholic Answer Bible, published by Our Sunday Visitor. I'm Al Cresta.